Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to the Runner's World podcast with me, Rick Pearson.
And me, Ben Hobson.
Today we're talking with Tom Craggs about 80-20 training on low mileage. Ooh, technical.
What a fantastic combination of knowledge we're going to deliver to everyone. Our knowledge, Rick, which is just phenomenal, and then topped up with a little bit of knowledge from old Craggsy.
I think that Tom Craggs is almost meriting his own jingle. He's our go-to expert, isn't he? And I'm going to work on this. I'm going to work on this one.
It's been a while, Rick.
He's our guy, isn't it? It's been a while.
It's been a while since we had a new jingle.
I think he needs his own one. Yeah, it is. Maybe out of time.
Friend of the podcast and a man who has his own jingle, Kieran Alger, is currently running the Danube. And But we should do a jingle for him because Danube rhymes with YouTube, and that was enough for me.
Perfect.
to go with it.
It's destiny.
So, you know, there could be an influx of new jingles. Hold tight, everyone. This is huge.
Hold tight. Stick around. Hey, let's do some hard news. People come here for hard news.
That's true.
I'm told. So, Western States 100. If you're going to ask me, Ben, you can do one ultra marathon before you die. It would be Western States 100.
Is it
a classic? I think so. I think it would be for me.
Interesting.
And there were wins on the weekend for Ruth Croft and Adam Peterman. Really, really, really good racing over there. Like, amazing conditions. It's always quite warm, actually. And then the British champs, there were some upsets. So both the men's and women's 100 metres. Azu won the men's and Nita won the 100 metres. And neither would be favourites going into that. So, yeah, some quite interesting racing going on. And someone on our own team, Ben's been running as well.
Oh, Runner's World's own Howard Calvert completed, decimated, let's say, Labradoodle, the big ultra running race in the Dolomites, which is incredibly hard. That's what Howard did at the weekend. So huge props to Howard, because that was a beast. I've seen a picture of him at the end, and he looks done. So
yeah.
Congratulations.
It's meant to be beautiful, but extremely difficult. Hey, look, a bit of science as well, because the other reason people come to Runner's World podcast is for cutting edge science.
Famously.
And this is about arm swing. So
I'm interested.
I think a lot of people are. Like, we kind of obsess about stuff like cadence and our stride, but I think arm swing is something that people think about as well. But anyway, this is quite an interesting study. So it said, a new study came up with some surprising results about how important arm swing is to running. And essentially, the researchers looked at sprint speed and how much it was affected by arm swing, and they did that by people running normally for 30 meters or people having no arm swing at all. And actually, it didn't really make much difference to speed. It was only 1.6%,
right?
Not a lot. An older study focused on arm swing's effect on endurance running and found that using no arm swing at all increased energy consumption by 3%, which again is probably surprisingly little given that it's, you know, it's a kind of big part of your body. So the conclusion: keep swinging your arms, Ben. Don't stop swinging your arms. Of course, don't do that. It's madness. But maybe don't obsess about it either, because it doesn't actually seem to make that much difference. So I think maybe people who go around trying to really change their arm carriage, your arm swing, actually might be better off concentrating on something else.
I would like to talk to someone. I think that's if you've got a very, by like a symmetrical arm swing. I think if you're like lopsided, then it makes a massive difference, because then you throw the whole of the like kinetic chain off if you're moving differently like that. Like, because I off the back of having my dodgy shoulder, my right arm, I've noticed I swing it less, and I've noticed that transfers, you get like a twisting. Obviously, there's like less twisting from one side of the body. So, I mean, I'm not going to say that I'm obsessed with arm swing now that you've brought it up, but I do consider it quite a lot because of my lopsidedness. So it's an interesting study. I like it. I'm going to say that I half believe it.
Yeah, fair enough. No, I think that's, I mean, I think with all these studies, they are like, they're not to be taken as gospel sometimes, you know. And I think, yeah, one thing that I reckon people should do is, yeah, look at your own body first and what's your own experience. And this, just because this has come out of, you know, a reputable...
just because it's come up on reputable science scientists.
Gait and Posture Journal and the Journal of Experimental Biology. But sure, yeah, you disagree with it. Yeah, maybe.
I don't disagree with it. I reckon that they tested everyone who swung their arms perfectly in symmetry.
Well, that's it. Like, how big are these studies? And are rarely, you know, extremely big. Anyway, so that's there. Anyway.
Anyway, thanks for some science, Rick. And either way, I appreciated your dose of science.
Thank you. So 80-20 training. So obviously Tom is the expert on this. He's going to have his own jingle soon. but I think it's an interesting one. Tom's going to give us an overview of what 80-20 training is, but a lot of people will be familiar with it, kind of the idea that it's slightly polarised training, 80% being easy, 20% being more difficult.
Yep.
And I'm slightly of the opinion, before sort of talking with Tom anyway, that it's something that makes a lot of sense if you're running loads of miles. So say you're running like 60 miles a week,
yeah,
and you're like, okay, 20% of 60.
Yeah.
I'm going to be found out here.
Hold on.
Let's say it's what is it?
Don't ask me.
12 or
Oh, God.
It's about 12.
I think
it's 12
don't
miles.
Come near me with this one.
Because 12 miles of quality hard work is quite a lot, isn't it? That's probably like at least two sessions, like a big interval session and a pretty big tempo run as well. So kind of thing, 20%, you don't really want to be doing more quality than that. That's 12 miles a week. But when you get down to stuff like 20 miles a week, which in some corners of running, people start getting sniffy about this and say, oh, well, you should just do more running. But it's not always as simple.
No, 20, I mean, it's still 20 is still a considerable amount of running.
Totally, yeah.
You're going
out at least three times a week, I think, to do 20 miles a week.
That's four lots of five, Rick. There's some maths for you. 5 miles is nothing to scoff at, you know, in terms of...
No, yeah, exactly. It's a completely legitimate amount of running to do a week, as is any amount. But like... I think often it can be looked at and said, you should just try and run more. But actually, the reason for people not running is like, could be an injury thing. Could be like, when I run more than this, I actually get a bit injured. So I need to actually only run three or four times a week. And I want to get I still want to be good. I still want to like get the most out of myself with that. It's not like I'm just like going out jogging twice a week and I don't really care. I want to set PBs, but I want to do it without putting in loads of miles. And I think that's why this is such a big Google term, is because like there are competitive people who can't put in huge mileage and want to work out how they should best
use
those miles. And is 80-20 really for them? Yeah.
Well, there we go. It's a good topic. I like it a lot. I would put myself in the camp of people who I don't thrive on big miles. There's definitely a switching point for me where I just end up battering myself rather than feeling like I'm getting better and faster all the time. So yeah, I'm glad that we got Tom on to facilitate my own interests.
Yeah. Hopefully people enjoy it. So I think let's get Tom on. Guest of the week. Here in the studio. Guest of the week. Sometimes on the phone. Could be an athlete. Our guest this week is England Athletics road running manager and a coach to many of the UK's top runners. He's also RW's training columnist, whose monthly column Personal Best offers expert advice on how people can train smarter to get more from their running. So Tom Craggs, welcome back to the Runner's World podcast.
Great to chat to you again, guys. I hope you're both well. Interesting topic this time around.
Yeah, so can we just start off by anyone who's sort of unfamiliar with 80-20, what do we mean when we say 80-20 endurance training?
Yeah, so I think probably one of the things, even if you're relatively new to running, that you might be familiar with coaches recommending for you to do is to perhaps keep your easy running a little bit easier and perhaps look to run some of your harder sessions as a result a little bit harder or in a little bit more of a focused way. And really the premise of 80-20 is really kind of consolidating those principles I wouldn't call it a formula as such, but it's a training approach that is based around some research from an exercise physiologist called Stephen Seiler, whose research looked at some of the best Kenyan athletes, and he's done many bits of kind of leading research in endurance over the years. But one of the key bits of research was looking at how do these Kenyan athletes train? And his research seems to suggest that those athletes spent a comparatively large amount of time training at much lower intensities than perhaps the rest of us do. And then only a smaller portion of their time training at harder intensities. And so the way that Siler thinks about it, a light bulb was just burst in my very dramatic. I think we should keep that in. It was very exciting. Yeah. I'm still here though, but sadly the lights have gone out. Yeah. So Siler's research was gathered together in sort of a digestible format by a guy called Matt Fitzgerald, whose books and kind of articles around what are called 80-20 training are kind of quite digestible and probably a good read. But essentially, if you think about your training in three different kind of, for want of a better word, buckets, you've got your easy bucket, you've kind of got your middle bucket, and you've got your harder bucket. Now, there are various physiological kind of what we might call thresholds that sit between those buckets, but don't worry about it too much. What 80-20 is encouraging you to do is to put a little bit more running in the first bucket, a small percentage of your running in the third bucket, and skip out or do less in that kind of middle bucket. So doing less steady training and a little bit more easy training and a little bit of harder training. So it's what we call polarized training, if you like. So if you think pushing your run into either end of the spectrum, most of us are probably, I say guilty, it's not guilty, and we'll probably come on to it, but most of us probably do quite a lot in that middle bucket, was steady, not quite hard, not quite easy. So it's really 80-20, 80% of your running there or thereabouts done in that easy area, 20% done in that harder area. Range of different kind of measurements, physiological kind of measurements we can use to detect whether you're in that right place, but that's the essential premise. Lots of easy training, small percentage of hard training, not much in the middle.
Are you an advocate of this approach, Tom?
Like all things, and like whenever we chat, I have the annoying answer of it depends. And I'm always really nervous about anything that is packaged up. And this is no criticism of anybody involved, because all of the people who kind of there is a good basis why advocates of 80-20 are advocates of it. But I'm always nervous around, you know, ultimately you are an individual and your running is individual to you. Your athletic background, your individual biology, and of course the goals that you're training for are individual to you. And so I would unquestionably say yes for a percentage of runners. I've definitely seen that they do probably a lot in that kind of steady area. They're not comfortable with running easy. They struggle with that, whether it's something to do with the mechanics, whether it's just because they can't restrain themselves and they kind of end up pushing a bit harder on their easy days, and then that compromises their hard days. So I don't think it's a bad sort of principle to be aware of rather than a rule to follow. I think that's what I'd say. And the reason why I say that is there are certain circumstances where I will actively encourage runners to do training in the middle. So if you're a slightly quicker, say, marathon runner, your race day pace is probably going to sit right in the middle. It's not going to be at either end of the spectrum. And so, you know, for me, there is some value in you doing some race pace running. And if we believe that, then essentially we're kind of already starting to push against a little bit that 80-20 approach. So I'd say don't treat it as a rule. But it's not a bad starting principle to come from. The only other thing I would say, and this comes down to, I guess, we could get very academic about it. But there is, I would say it's a little bit of a myth that we can really kind of clearly define those three buckets as clearly as sometimes they are advertised to be. You know, bucket one does this, bucket two does this, bucket three does this. Well, actually, bodies aren't like that. It's a scale. It's like a sliding scale, and the boundaries between those buckets are permeable. Obviously, because if you go out the door now and you start jogging easy, and you want to, in 10 or 15 minutes time, get up to 5K type pace, you're not going to go from bucket one to bucket three. You're going to progress on through those buckets, aren't you? So it's a bit of a myth to kind of, you will always do some training in that middle zone. Whatever happens, you always will. And for some people, you probably need to do a bit less in there. In fact, actually, probably for quite a lot of people, you need to do a little bit less. That facilitates other things to happen. You could do a bit more training without getting injured. You could get more out of your harder sessions. And there are a range of really good physiological things that happen when we train easy, basically. And some runners miss out on them because they just don't do enough easy running, basically.
I think it seems like a philosophy, as you said, that was kind of born out of looking at how elites trained. And obviously, elites, compared to recreational, want to have very high mileage. Does 80-20 really work with someone who's covering, let's say, quite low mileage? So let's go right down to sort of 20 miles a week. So someone who's running 3 or 4 times, following that formula, I'm not very good at maths, but I think they could only do 4 miles of hard running if you did 20 miles a week, which feels like probably one quality session. Do you think actually that this 80-20 model doesn't really actually work under a certain threshold, or actually is that about right?
I think what we have to do is then start to treat it with a little bit more of a, not a pinch of salt, but just be more aware of what it's trying to do. Rather than getting fixated on the numbers, what are the principles of 80-20 trying to get us to do? And that is, firstly, to recognise that actually the foundation of your training and the foundation of your fitness is carved out of that, of those easy, that easy time on feet. The way that we build capillary density, we build our mitochondria in our cells and kind of make them more efficient. All of these things happen, or not all of them, but a lot of these things happen when we train at lower intensities, and that's the foundation. That's the foundation of it. It's like, build yourself this platform of easy running. Without that, the harder sessions, are perhaps not going to give you as much value as you want them to do, because ultimately for most of us, unless we're competing over very short distances, our sport is what we call an aerobic sport. So actually the adaptations that happen at those easy paces are the ones that we kind of really need when we race. But B, ultimately, what probably most of us find is that if we do more at that easy end and we avoid, or we don't spend as much time in a steady middle area, we get injured less. We don't create as much like cumulative fatigue. And so we end up going to our harder sessions a bit fresher, a bit stronger. We arrive at our races a little bit more energized. So I think even if you're on low mileage, those principles are still important. And probably, I still think, so let's say you're running 4 times a week. Let's break this down a little bit. If you're running 4 times a week, yeah, I'd say probably 3 of those need to be easy and 1 of them needs to be a bit harder. So that gets us to 25%. And assuming that one of your easier runs is probably a bit of a longer run, we're kind of there or thereabouts, 80-20 already. So for me, I still think that there are reasonable principles to take, albeit you're going to be less tight about the numbers, because there's going to be, ultimately, if you do a slightly bigger hard session, like you do, say, a tempo run instead of an interval session, well, maybe you're going to start to go a little bit above 20%. But I think if you've always got in your mind, actually, what is the thing here ultimately that's going to build me fitness? And this is, I think, a really important principle to take, is that your hard sessions, you can't get away with training poorly with your easy runs by just adding in more hard sessions. So yes, we're time poor, we struggle for time to get training in. 3 or 4 runs a week is perhaps realistic for a lot of us. We can't be running 100, 110, 120 miles a week like some of the athletes do. And so, you know, yes, we need to be realistic about that. And yet at the same time, just because we can't do that volume doesn't necessarily mean we can get all of those fitness adaptations by just doing more hard sessions. It doesn't work like that. We're getting slightly different physiological adaptations when we work hard compared to easy. And so what I'd say is, actually, if you're struggling to think, well, how do I fit into this 80-20 principle because I'm not training very much, well, probably what we need to do is let's train a little bit more. And that little bit more probably would be doing a bit more easy running, if that makes sense. So if you're right down at the bottom end, 5-10 minutes, an extra 20 to 30 minute run a week, actually that could just tip you over and get you to that nice balance, I suppose.
How does like cross training fit in with this sort of 80-20? Because, you know, strength and conditioning and all those sorts of things. If someone could have some of their 80% as non-running activities, leaving sort of like the higher proportion for higher intensity and the 20%, does that work? Or is it, as you say, these adaptations that come with the easy running?
No. I mean, the adaptations that we're talking about here are primarily cardiovascular adaptations. So adaptations around cardiovascular, cardiopulmonary kind of adaptations. It's about heart, lungs, blood composition, blood flows, that sort of stuff. And so those adaptations will happen equally as well on a bike, cross trainer, in a pool, aqua jogging, etc., etc. There's a debate to be had around, you know, 10 minutes of running versus 10 minutes of aqua jogging, you know, but I think we can get too focused on the details. Ultimately, you know, if you're mixing running and cross training, we can still take those similar principles. And for some people, it might be, as you rightly say, well, we do more of our easier work as cross training, and then we do our quicker work running. So we do more of that 20% running and more of the 80% cross training. For some people, it might be, though, that ultimately what you find gets you injured or niggled is each time you try to do a hard or a quick training session, in which case, maybe for you, that balances the other way around. The thing that's going to get you fit, as we always say, and it's a boring thing to say, but it's true, is just remaining injury-free and staying consistent over a long period of time. So how you cut that balance up is up to you. Of course, it's not just about cardiovascular stuff. There's also muscle, fibres, tendons, you know, what we call running economy, so body, getting your body used to kind of your foot striking the ground and getting some reactive force. So you do have to run, obviously, and I would always recommend doing some quicker running. And even if that's just doing some strides or something to just get your legs turning over and keep that kind of mechanical speed, if you like, going. So still teaching your body to run quickly is important. But they don't have to be huge, big, hard sessions necessarily. But cross training is right in there. Strength and conditioning a little bit different, because the adaptations we're looking for from strength and conditioning are a little bit more focused on, you know, building strength, obviously, the soft tissue stuff, bone density, all that sort of stuff. You get a small cardiovascular response from it, but not so much. So the 80-20 stuff is more around the cardiovascular side of things. And those adaptations that happen when we actually kind of train aerobically.
Yeah, yeah. No, so there's no squeezing the strength and conditioning into that 20%.
Not unless you're doing a decent amount of walking or running between each strength exercise, which there are some kind of, you know, you can do. Some listeners may have done things like Oregon circuits, where you kind of mix running and strength training. There are ways to kind of, I guess, be efficient with your time. But even then, I think, yeah, no, it probably wouldn't. Unfortunately,
no, yeah, exactly.
A bit of extra time.
As everyone tries to always get out of the strength and conditioning, that's the...
So as far as that 20%, this is our quality area of running. And say we're still looking at low mileage here. I always think of the quality sessions, essentially there's sort of three of them, that the big ones, which are like hills, tempo, threshold running. If you were kind of down to actually being able to only do one quality session a week, would you always say to people, right, you probably drop the intervals or drop the hills, do the threshold, or how is it, if you had to sort of cut it up, or is it impossible to say and it's too individualized?
I would say it's more about where you sit within a training cycle and what event you're training for. So let's say I'm training for 800 meters, and I'm going to pick extreme examples here, but let's say I'm a runner training for 800 meters. If I'm only doing one quality session a week, well, you know, 4 months away from my goal race, I might be doing my threshold running, or some hill work. As I get closer, I'll be prioritizing probably some harder and quicker interval training. When we say threshold, obviously conscious of terminology, we all use different terminology. There's a debate about even what threshold running means, but let's just say, as a shorthand kind of way to think about it as a, you know, an intensity you might be able to hold for 50 to 60 minutes in a race, there or thereabouts. So there were some really good fitness adaptations that happened there, and that happens right on that probably border between bucket two and bucket three, if you like. That's one of our thresholds that sit between the two. If you go too long with those threshold sessions, and you make them, we do too much volume there, your body's going to end up right in that kind of bucket two. So we're then not kind of fulfilling the principles of our sort of 80-20 approach, I suppose. So you've got to be, with your threshold sessions, you do need to be reasonably, if you are going to follow this kind of 80-20 principle, you need to be reasonably aware of your exercise intensity. Are you actually working hard enough, or actually are you just doing more like steady running in the middle? But as you get close to the race, obviously if you're doing something quick like an 800 meter race, you're gonna want to start to take that one session a week and make it more specific to the race you're training for. So you are going to probably transition from doing threshold type running down to more like 5k to 10k pace running, and then you get a little bit closer, you're probably going to be doing a bit more in that 1500 meter 3k 5k area, and then a smattering of 800 meter pace running as well. Obviously it flips around the other way. If you're training for something like a half marathon, you know, we might start off a ways out from race just doing things like strides or very short hills where we're developing power, and then you probably find if you're looking at time or volume, you're probably doing less than 20% intensity just because the efforts are so short, but they're high intensity. And then as we get closer to our race, where those efforts lengthen out, they become more like, you know, 5k 10k type running, longer perhaps interval sessions, and then we get close to the race day, you might be doing more threshold running and the like. So I think it's more, it depends on what you're training for, and it will change over time. The key is get more specific towards your goal race pace as you get closer to your race, fundamentally. To use that one, ultimately it's 80-20 on 3 to 4 runs a week, you have to kind of make that quality count, I suppose. So you need to just be aware of, well, what are your areas for development? What are you missing? You don't necessarily need to get in a lab to do that or speak to a sports scientist to do it. It can be useful, but just have to think about it. Like, you know, where do you need to challenge yourself perhaps a little bit differently in order to move your fitness along, and use that time wisely. But don't obviously recognize that the rest of your running, the easy and cross training, the easy stuff, the 80%, that's where you're going to be getting probably the majority of your fitness gains, or at least a large portion of them. So get it right, but don't panic about whether it's, you know, should I be going at 5k pace or kind of a little bit quicker, a little bit slower. You can get too caught in the minutiae sometimes.
This is the Runner's World podcast.
Small details are big surfaces, tight corners are odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
I find it fascinating because you mentioned Stephen Sellier, and I think at one point he was asked if you could train only 2 times a week, what would that look like? And his response would, it would probably end up combining some high intensity and low intensity work in both sessions. So what do you think of, so in terms of that sort of focus on mixed pace sessions for low mileage, is that kind of a better way of doing it?
Yeah, and that's really important, and probably practically something which is going to be, ultimately anybody wanting to follow these principles on low mileage is probably going to have to do that, particularly if they're only training 2 to 3 times a week. So rather than thinking about, well, I've got these 4 or say 2 or 3 instances of training in my week, and one of those instances needs to be hard and the other two need to be, think about it more about what we're actually trying to do with our body and the percentage of time spent at these different intensities. Now, if you're going to go and do a long run, for example, let's say you're going to go and do 75 minutes, you could do something like 45 minutes easy, and then the last 30, say 45 minutes in your kind of 80% area, that first effort level, and then in the last 30 minutes do something like 4x5, 5x5 minutes of effort at threshold, so the up towards the bottom end of that third effort. You know, that doesn't mean that whole run suddenly becomes a hard run. Obviously a decent percentage of it, more than half of it time wise was spent actually in the 80% area. So I would start to think about it more in terms of, okay, my overall minutes per week, let's say, and of course your body doesn't even work on weeks, you know, it's just how we do things as human beings, but it's a useful reference point because that's how we kind of order our lives sometimes. So think about your minutes of exercise per week and how those minutes cut up. Then I think if you're doing loads and loads of running, this, you know, you can start to think about more, what session, what's the focus of each session? Is it an easy session? Is it a hard session? When you're only training a little bit, you kind of got to get a little bit more like, well, overall, my percentage of my week, I've done this. And you obviously, technology now, watches do that for you. You probably notice if you're using a Garmin or a Polar or whatever, as soon as you finish your run, it will give you that breakdown of time spent in different training zones. So, you know, the maths is done for you a little bit, provided you've tapped into, you know, you're accurate on your heart rates and, you know, your device is working as it should do. You've got a bit of support to help work that out. So yes, mixed pace sessions would be logical. So then effectively you're not doing, rather than doing, I've got an easy run, I've got a hard run tomorrow, then I maybe got another easy run or another 2 days of easy running. It becomes every session is blended, and within each session, you're looking at that 80 to 20 split, if you like. Yeah, interesting debates, and there's lots of different ways we can do it. But that's what I mean about, like, go back to first principles. What is this trying to get me to do? This is trying to get me to break out of the mold of just doing everything in the middle, because that's where we tend to like to sit. We move along, our ego gets satisfied a little bit because we've been running kind of hard, but not really hard enough to get a huge stimulus, but not really easy enough to get the kind of benefit that can accrue from going genuinely easy. So it's what it's trying to do is still as clear as that middle bit. So however you do it, just keep going back. Okay, what is the purpose of what I'm doing? You know, I've got this run today. How am I going to break it down, and why am I breaking it down like that?
I know this is thought of as an endurance model, and I think certainly for sort of half marathons and marathons, it sort of instinctively makes a lot of sense. What about something like parkrun, 5K? Does an 80-20 split, roughly speaking, still hold, Tom? Or should actually people be thinking about a bigger proportion being to kind of quality, harder running, in fact, if you really sort of concentrating on 5K or something like that?
I have to say, I don't, with my coaching, I don't follow 80 to 20 principles particularly, but if I were to drill into the training plans of the athletes I coach, I bet it would fall broadly in those areas. Maybe there would be a little bit, particularly for some of the marathon runners and stuff, maybe there would be a little bit more in that middle area. And it wouldn't be quite, and it definitely wouldn't be as clearly defined as this and then nothing here. It's just not like that. But I would say for a 5K athlete, you're possibly even more focused on the polarization of training. So, you know, okay, I understand what you're saying. Like maybe we're still steering clear of that middle bracket, but do you do 30% and 70%, say? I honestly, this is my gut, and I kind of, you know, I'm sure if you got Stephen or Matt on, they would disagree with me, and that's fine. This is kind of healthy debate. I personally don't think anything dramatically different is going to happen if you're doing 25-30%, you know, a little bit harder. Some athletes just respond to that. So I've got some athletes, 5K athletes, say, who like to have a split and respond really well to a split of doing a harder day, an easy day, a harder day, an easy day. And they probably do end up doing a little bit of a higher percentage of quicker and higher intensity running. Some still really need that 2 or 3 days easy, 1 day hard, 2 or 3 days easy, 1 day hard. But fundamentally, the energy systems we're using to compete well at 5K, the majority, ultimately, to be a good 5K runner, 80% of the fitness you're going to need, 80-90% of the fitness you need, is similar to that of a marathon runner. We're still completely reliant, or is so dominated by our aerobic fitness, that it's not a massive difference, particularly. How we use the 20% is more relevant. So what do those hard sessions look like? So yes, then maybe I would be doing a little bit of threshold and tempo running, but I'd definitely be wanting to do some quick running too, some 3K, some 5K stuff. So I'd say it's less about the 80-20 split. I'll probably keep that. In fact, I might be even more conscious of how slow my easy running is, because I want to arrive at my sessions and my races ready to run quick. And if I'm too fatigued from doing too much in that middle bucket, then it's going to impact upon my sessions, and then I don't get to run quickly enough to perform well over 5K. So in a weird way, no, as I'm talking through it, I say no, it probably doesn't affect that 80-20 split. And if anything, it reinforces the importance to really keep your 80% pretty easy. And we polarize things even more. The only thing that changes is how we use the 20%, I suppose.
Have you seen any sort of real downside to this approach? I mean, because it's sort of, you know, but anything that polarizes training, is it one of those ones that just doesn't work for some people and that's fine? Or is it actually that it can be people adhere to it far too strictly and that can be the...
Yeah. So A, there are the individual stuff that we've already talked about, and I'm trying to look at the papers, but they're not difficult to find. It was actually early on this year, the on the academic side, it was set up like two competing papers, if you like, were released. Professor Andy Jones, who was Paul Radcliffe's physiologist on the Breaking 2 project, Dr. Mark Burnley, and a few other academics who are actually not opposed to polarized training in principle as such, but they were basically saying, in reality, that's not how people train. They don't train in this kind of this and this, you know, and so this kind of really kind of polarized approach. So the reality of training, something else is going on. And then there was a counterpoint paper written by Seiler and a couple of other academics whose names escape me, but we'll find the papers. Google it, have a little look. And they're worth reading. They're well written if you're not into the academic stuff. They're well written to understand. And it's important to mention, because even on in the area where there's a lot of research done, there were big debates in this area. Like, does polarized training work or doesn't it work? Should we be doing actually more in that middle area, not less? So the debates are out, and absolutely there are, for some athletes, they will go backwards following an 80-20 approach. I would say there are definitely some athletes I coach who I've tried it with and it hasn't worked. And I would definitely say, let's just take an example of, say, a 3 hour 30 marathon runner, and it's sort of the example I gave earlier on in this interview. If we're following an 80-20 approach, where's the room to go and run marathon pace if you're that athlete? Because ultimately, if we want to get confidence running at race pace, and confidence in your ability to run at race pace, yes, there's a lot of physiological things that need to happen. We do need to be really good at running aerobically, burning stored fats, you know, able to fuel on the run and to be generally fit and have good endurance. But ultimately, there's a big element of confidence. And most of the athletes I've coached with a marathon, a lot of them will draw their self-efficacy, their confidence from having done some running at race pace. And so for those athletes, if we're really strictly following an 80-20 rule, they don't get to do the thing that helps them build confidence for some of them. So then I really think there's a judgment call. And for me, there's a very good reason why a lot of the, you know, our best, say, marathon runners, and even if you're a sort of two and a half hour marathon runner, really that marathon pace, it sits in the middle. It doesn't sit in that hard area. It feels hard, but it doesn't, physiologically speaking, it is still below what we might call lactate turn point or maximum lactate steady state. It's a kind of, it sits in that middle area. And so if it's that bad, how come they're doing so well off doing stuff in the middle? So you've got to, it's unfortunately like one of those things, and it's, this is where I'm probably always an annoying person to speak to on this, is that, you know, as much as we'd love hard and fast rules in sports, they very rarely exist. And it is, I think it's really important to have awareness of the principles, and there are these debates that go on. Look at kind of threshold models of training compared to polarized models of training, or what we call sort of pyramidal models of training, can't get the words out today, essentially where we do a lot easy, a little bit less in the middle zone, and a little bit less in the hard zone. You know, there are different models of training that athletes have successfully used to achieve the results. The important thing is to you to understand yourself. And I would say most people, and kind of one of the basic rules of fitness really, is that our bodies are very adaptable, so they adapt to the work that we throw at it. And so one of the reasons why polarized training can be quite useful for some runners, no matter whether you're running two or three times a week or, you know, 15 times a week if you're doing very high mileage, is that your body gets used to the training you've done. So if you've been doing a lot in that kind of comfortably hard area in the middle, or just steady area in the middle, even just a change of kind of going, well, actually, I'm going to slow some of it down and speed some of it up, sometimes that's enough to kind of get that different stress, to trigger a different adaptation. So sometimes it's just about doing something different to what you're used to doing, and vice versa. So don't get caught up with it. Just understand it and understand the benefits that it can bring. And I would definitely say for a high percentage of runners, it's something they should consider looking at, because to get stuck in a rut in the middle, you know. But maybe for elite athletes, particularly ones training over longer distances, I think there's more debates to be had. It's important to understand those debates.
Tom, thanks so much for coming on the podcast and talking to us about 80-20. It's a fascinating subject. We know it's something that, yeah, a lot of people Google and a lot of people kind of want to know about, particularly at low mileage. So thanks very much for your time. And yeah, hopefully have you back on some point soon.
Yeah, God, I mean, you know, give it a few months so you don't have to hear me rambling.
Don't worry.
academic debates.
No, it's great. You know, a couple of months time and there'll be the 50-50 approach, and we'll get you in to talk about that.
That'd be absolutely right. We just need the kind of mush in the middle approach, and then I'll be an expert.
Perfect. Thanks a lot.
So that brings us to the end of this week's Runner's World podcast. A huge thanks to our guest, Tom Craggs, and to you, of course, for listening.
You can subscribe to this podcast, which I hope you already do. And if not, you should do that right now. Just wherever you're listening, click subscribe, and then you won't miss a single episode. Every single week it comes out, and it's full of goodness, just like what you've listened to. You can subscribe to the Runner's World magazine. That's Runner's World UK subscription. If you Google that, you'll find where to get the magazine arriving at your house every month. And runnersworld.com/UK for all your internet-based running needs. And that is it. And you will hear from us next week.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.